and this is the Convict Australia podcast. Thank you for tuning in. They were 125 days into the voyage. They left Cork in Ireland on the 8th of January, 1835, and so far it had been a fairly uneventful trip. Bound for Sydney, under the command of Captain Benjamin Peck, were 150 female convicts, along with 33 of their children, 9 free women with their 22 children, and a crew of 26. The prisoners were kept away from the free women as much as they could. The superintendent, Surgeon John Stevenson, who was in charge of the convicts, had settled the convict women into a routine. The weather had been fair, so the women had spent a lot of their time on the upper deck. When they weren't engaged in the tasks, such as scrubbing the decks, washing the clothes, and cleaning the prison below, there was sewing and needlework to pass the time. The women had been divided into messes of 8, with one of the group made head mess, or matron. These women were hand-picked by the surgeon and were usually chosen for their good behaviour, noted in the reports from the Governor of Cork. Each mess was assigned to one berth and shared drinking vessels and wooden platters, which were marked with the number of their mess. 2 or 3 convicts were chosen to be the cooks for all of the convict women. They probably worked under the supervision of a head cook. The days came and went in relative calm, but lately there was a sense that the journey was coming to an end. The crew had been split into 2 groups called watchers, rotating their deck duties to keep the ship sailing. Each shift was between 2 and 4 hours long. The crew had to keep the ship operating at maximum efficiency, and they were always busy adjusting the sails to take advantage of the direction of the wind. Ideally, the ship would be downwind, with the wind coming from behind, propelling them forward. But if they needed to head straight into the wind, the crew would lead the ship into the wind at angles. This was known as tacking into the wind. The captain kept the crew very busy for 2 reasons. Firstly, there was always so much to do, and they needed to be hypervigilant to any changes of wind speed and direction. And secondly, because he feared that idle crew might lead to mutiny, which had happened on other ships. When not adjusting the sails, the crew were checking that the hull and rigging were in good order, or they were scraping the rust off chain cables. At midday on the 12th of May, the 3-masted bark was rounding the southern point of the Australian mainland and heading into the treacherous waters of Bass Strait. King Island was 90 miles to the west of them. Peck was an experienced master and had sailed the Neva to Port Jackson about 2 years prior. Having spent those 4 months sailing her from Plymouth, he knew her every quirk, from the way she heaved under sail to the rolling waves, to the sound of the whistle in her ropes, and the creaks made under his feet as he charged from one end of her to the other. Every ship had its own soul, and a deep connection was formed by her seamen. At 2 a.m. the wind picked up and King Island was spotted. Peck felt confident in his calculations, and by the light of the moon he steered the Neva port tack to keep clear of the Harbinger reefs. They continued on this way for the next 3 hours until the lookout cried out that there were breakers ahead. Peck instantly responded by ordering the helm hard a starboard. But as the Neva turned, her keel struck a rock and came away. Peck navigated her back into the wind again, but struck the reef on the port bow and swung broadside on. The crew did everything they could, but the ship began filling with water. The foremasts and topmasts were cut away, but the posts holding up the prison walls collapsed in, causing the prisoners to scramble up to the top deck. The crew now began to launch the lifeboats, but when they were preparing the gig, the iron davit broke in their haste and the gig broke into pieces. They swiftly began untying the next boat and lowering it down into the sea. On board this pinnace was Captain Peck, a very ill Stevenson who had been suffering from scorbutic dysentery, and a handful of crew and prisoners. But the women left behind, in their growing panic, rushed the small boat and it sank. Unfortunately, everyone in the little boat drowned, apart from the captain and two of the seamen. The longboat and the cutter were the next boats to be launched, but they were both capsized by the crashing waves. 4 hours had now passed since the Neva had crashed into the rock. Some of the women had helped themselves to the liquor in the cuddy and were hopelessly drunk when the ship began to break into pieces from the pounding waves. The poop deck caved in on top of the women, killing most inside the cuddy. Many of those who weren't killed were too drunk to save themselves and perished. As the ship broke apart, the people left on board fell straight into the cold water and struggled to stay afloat. Sadly, most people couldn't swim and were swept away and drowned. Others scrambled to grab hold of debris that had floated to the surface. Captain Peck and around 20 other people held on to one piece of the ship, but with each wave crashing down upon them, after 8 hours of drifting, only Peck and two others remained. Over the next 8 long hours, 22 men and women survivors drifted to shore, still clinging to pieces of the wreckage. They stumbled out of the water, utterly exhausted, and collapsed in a heap. There was Captain Peck, Chief Mate Joseph Bennett, 12 female prisoners, and 8 of the crew. They looked around and discovered a barrel of rum had washed ashore. Peck served each survivor a dram of the rum to warm themselves a little. They soon fell into an exhausted sleep in the nearby bush. When Peck awoke, he was dismayed to find many of them had died during the night, and strangely, some of them were found face down in the sand in different locations. He concluded that they must have died of cold and fatigue. There were now only 15 survivors. In the coming days, various bits and pieces from the ship drifted to shore. The survivors collected whatever was useful for them and were overjoyed when barrels of flour and pork washed ashore. But debris and supplies weren't the only thing that reached them. Up and down the beach, they were confronted by the horrifying sight of the dead bodies of the people who they had spent the last few months with. Over the course of 2 days, Peck and his crew buried 95 bodies. Dejected and weak, they waited out their time, rationing their supplies and praying that a passing ship would rescue them. As they had no way of letting anyone know what had happened to them and where they were banking on a miracle. 2 weeks had passed and they were surely feeling hopeless. That they would slowly die on this deserted beach on the other side of the world. That was until they saw 2 men walking towards them. They could scarcely believe what they were seeing. The group met the men with jubilation, thinking that they had been saved. But to their disappointment, the men had been marooned also. They soon learned that the ship these men had been travelling on, called the Tartar, had been wrecked at about the same time as the Neva. The men told them of a man named Scott, who worked as a sealer who was living on the island. Together, they went to Scott's hut. Scott owned several dogs and used them to capture wallabies to feed all the survivors. Not long after meeting Scott, Charles Friend, the owner of the Tartar, arrived on the island looking for his ship. Upon hearing of the loss of his ship and the loss of the Neva, he trekked to Peck's camp and rounded up the survivors and put them on his small vessel and set sail. Unfortunately, 3 survivors were on another part of the island and had to be left behind. He promised that he would send another boat out for them later. Friend and his boatload of survivors arrived in Georgetown on the Tamar River near Launceston on June 26. It had been more than 6 weeks since the Neva had been wrecked, and true to his word, a government vessel was sent back to King Island to rescue the two women and the man that was left behind. An inquiry was later held over the loss of the ship and so many lives. In his evidence, Peck put the accident down to the strong current pulling the ship to the southward and the incorrect positioning of the Harbinger Reef on his map. The court exonerated Peck, Surgeon Stevenson, the officers and all of the crew of all responsibility for the loss. The court decided that the loss came down to, quote, the reef being improperly laid down or an erroneous opinion formed by the master and crew of their distance from the land when the ship hauled to the wind, or more probably the concurrent influence of several minute errors, end quote. There has been some confusion over the exact number of lives lost. According to Captain Peck, 218 people drowned that day. 138 were convicts. There were also another 7 people who died after reaching King Island. 6 of the 7 were convicts, bringing the total loss of life to 225 people. 144 of those were convicts. 55 of them were children, making it one of the worst shipwrecks in Australian history. Thank you for listening to the Convict Australia podcast. If you'd like to show your appreciation and get more involved, there are a number of ways you can. The first is by signing up to Convict Australia on Patreon, and you will get some perks like the Convict Australia newsletter. Secondly, leave a review and tell your friends and family. This really does make a huge difference. And lastly, join the Facebook and Instagram group Convict Australia. All the links I've mentioned will be in the show notes. Thank you again. Till next time.